Welcome to this episode of the Sport Kite Podcast. I am your host, Nick O'Neill, and I want to thank you for tuning in and listening. The Sport Kite Podcast is a part of sportkite.org. It is an all-volunteer run website and podcast. It is supported by amazing folks like you that have gone to buymeacoffee.com/sportkite and sent us a little bit of wind to kind of keep our kites aloft and keep the podcast hosted, the website hosted, all that. So a big thank you to all of our supporters. It has meant a lot over the past three seasons. We really, really do appreciate it. And yeah, so in this episode, I'm really excited because finally get to kind of introduce this idea of a new type of sport kite competition that I've kind of been, you know, dreaming of over pandemic years and kind of bouncing ideas off of various sport kite competitors and getting their input. And we did kind of a round table discussion there at Sport Kite Camp a few weeks ago, and I just kind of let all of the flyers talk about it and share their ideas. And so I'm going to share that recording here. In this, you will hear a multitude of voices. We are sitting around the dinner table, just kind of having a chat. We have some rather experienced flyers and repeat attendees here on Sport Kite Podcast, and that would be Spence Watson and Paul DeBacher. And then we also have John McCracken, who has also been a repeat person here on the podcast. And then we have two new people joining us, Teresa Gilpin and Dave Bernstein. And they are somewhat newer flyers to the sport kite scene. They've been flying for a few years, but they haven't really been doing tons of competition. One of them has done a handful of competitions, but so we just kind of got an all-around little bit of discussion from these folks and what they think about this kind of new competition idea. So have a listen to this. This is one of our longer episodes, and we'd love to hear what you think, your thoughts, your suggestions, any feedback you have. Again, this isn't a finalized thing yet. We are kind of workshopping through some of the nitty-gritty bits, and we would like to hopefully run this here sometime soon. And yeah, we'll put all of that information up on sportkite.org, on the website, and also on the Facebook page, so you can find out more there. Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and hop into this conversation.
She's not even paying attention.
What?
See?
That's the next level of this, whatever this is.
All right, so I guess the topic is that coming up kind of with a new competition format. You know, competition has kind of been very much the same way for the past few decades. And it just feels like, why don't we shake things up? And when we kind of got spitballing over an idea, we came up with there's three things that are, or there's like three aspects to tackle. One is it needs to be interesting and understandable for the audience. Yeah. I think we talked about it in an episode called The Cornhole Objective, right?
Yeah.
Is that the audience doesn't get ballet and precision.
Yes, they do.
Well,
it's just more difficult. Especially ballet. It's actually, when it's done well, it's very understandable.
But they don't understand how one person scores higher than the other.
There needs to be an immediate situation.
Right. So
we talk about that. Well, I mean, we beat that to death. Yeah.
So especially when you're comparing multiple people, they don't understand the difference between multiple people.
Do they really care, or do they just watch the ballet for the pure pleasure of watching it?
Correct. If there's the immediate scoring aspect of it, it will involve them more and help.
That's true.
Could potentially help.
Then help
grow
when
sport.
When scores are deferred by 2 days.
Correct.
Yeah.
I never cared about the scoring. I just watched it for the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of like when I go to a photography competition. You know, if people are photographers and they wonder why this got more points than that one did, But people that don't know anything about it really don't care. They just like what they see, or they don't like.
I think
what they
I see. Watched like the Olympics, right? I watched the figure skating, mm-hmm. right? And we're watching that, and we see the scores go up, and it's kind of fun to think about, oh, what this guy's going to score higher than that other one, or you know, it's going so well, or you know, all that kind of stuff, because it's a real time scoring,
yeah.
And it just mm-hmm. adds a little bit of content to mm-hmm. the whole picture, and kind of ties everything together a little bit in a way that's. A little bit extra engaging, which yep. is nice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, is you it, don't is have it possible? To understand. Certainly.
Yeah, even if you don't understand the scoring, just having it real time and you can like talk about it or kind of like have little, you know, quick bets
agree
of like, oh, I think this was going to go better.
The judging.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't think so.
Yeah, it's a little something interesting and a little extra to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. You know.
To me, that also encourages people to take the next step, right? Because then they're like. Either I want to do this, or I could do this, or I want to learn more about it,
mm-hmm.
is if they have that that justification or that easily achievable. Okay, well, the point is...
I like the Kermit arms there.
I know. Of course, this isn't on camera. I'm going to include the video of him staring at Kermit.
It also brings in some accountability, too.
Yep.
Not on the flyer, though. The accountability on the organization.
Okay.
Because there's that immediate point where the flyers can see it. They're not waiting around. They're not sitting there twiddling their thumbs. They know what's coming up next. If there's multiple rounds involved, they know
yeah.
who's going through. They know when their turn's going to fly. If there's seating involved, you know, there's... It would flow better than having, like you said, having to wait for a couple of days for
yeah.
results.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the other...
Even for competitors, sucks.
Yeah.
One for audience.
Yeah.
Always has.
If results aren't coming out for a couple days, the audience has already forgot about the complete... The entire
right.
the event.
Yeah.
The competitors
yeah.
are presumably still...
They're still in the stands waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not right there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see another TBD.
Oh.
I watch the snowboarding in the Olympics, and you know they're actively ranking them as you go.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
who the winner is when it's all done. Like,
yeah.
And then sport kite competitions, you get the scores maybe the next day, and then TBDs,
so
and you don't figure out
who the
top three are, or like what their order is
yeah.
until the end of the banquet.
Yeah.
That I don't go to.
Yeah.
Well, and like the point you made, if
you're
trying to engage people that are maybe not familiar with.
Yeah,
you're gonna lose that.
Yeah, they're
yeah.
they don't have the closed loop, right?
Yeah.
They don't get the closed loop.
Well, and especially with today's culture of immediacy,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
Like there is no practical reason why we can't.
There never was, actually.
I mean, it's certainly possible. The communication of results is the biggest undertaking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty easy to
believe,
communicate it to the flyer, but to the public aspect of it,
I believe it has always been done. So as to keep every flyer on the field to the last possible moment.
Yeah.
That was the reason of the TBDs in the last minute.
Hmm.
We're doing this at the very last possible opportunity. So as to keep everybody on the field.
Hmm.
Why?
That's a good question, is why.
So you can squeeze some more demos out of them.
Yeah. Get them flying more. But the other two aspects to tackle is that it has to be interesting enough for competitors that they'd want to do it. And especially, you know, I've heard it a lot from the top competitors who have already moved up multiple times. They're like, all right, this is boring. I'm competing against one person, if that. And it's the same one person repeatedly.
And it has been for... 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, so, and I've been an advocate, for better or worse, of combine everybody into the same.
Mm.
Every
and then
same
class.
And then
same class.
And you handicap it?
No. No. Because a novice should be scoring below a master.
Absolutely.
And yeah, that novice isn't going to get first. And guess what? They're going to learn to move up, and masters are going to have to work.
Will that deter people from competing then?
Well, apparently it has, but...
It would deter me.
I mean...
Yeah.
But on the other side, like you're saying,
I get
what you're saying,
you've got
a novice in there that's going to not progress because they're winning everything. you know, and they're just going to stay comfortable.
Yep.
Well, the point we have right now is that even you end up with really novice or experienced class people competing in masters because they keep moving up because they're winning because there's no one there to compete against. Yeah. And then you get someone who's actually masters and comes in and just sweeps.
Yeah.
And then it's just like not even any fun.
And it can be defeating because you're already expecting that level.
Yeah.
It's
not fun
you're expecting that separation.
Yeah. Also not fun for the masters.
Yeah, gives an ego boost, I guess, but you know.
But if you were brand new, if you were brand new and you knew you were going to a competition where you're going to be competing against people significantly better than you, that there is no classes, right? It just, you know, you're all in it together.
Or
well, too, it would depend on what the competition is. Because there's probably things that they're going to be in there that the masters can do that I wouldn't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I compete? I mean, if I don't know how to do anything, I'm not going to compete whether I'm a novice or not. You know?
Or is it a facet of the general competition? You know, like you have the general competition broken into classes, and then you can combine everybody into one for a specific open division.
They've done that. They do that a lot. And then they'll break out people based on.
Why would you want to consider competing to begin with? You, as a relative novice, then?
I would want to know, based on what I've learned, how I compare if I'm just knowing how well I've learned a skill, I guess,
so you
compared
would
with others. But if I don't even know the skill in the first place that's being, you know, expected in the competition, then there's no point
in
competing.
What's the point? Exactly. Yeah. But so you would, though, consider competing?
If it were
a level
routines
playing
that I could do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or a separate task, right? So maybe not a ballet routine, but if it was a competition.
Whatever.
So you don't want to go take a French test and it's actually a Spanish test.
To what now?
You don't want to go take a French test and it's actually a Spanish test.
Exactly. Do you think there's, like, because it sounded like you felt like maybe they're still a little intimidating to come into, like, a competition where everybody's grouped together in the same class. Is that fair?
No, I think it's more the case of, if the competition involves things I can't do.
Okay.
I'm a novice. I'm not going to do it, whether I'm a novice or second level or whatever level.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't do it, why do it? I mean, why compete? Because I can't even do it.
Right.
You know?
But then
I wonder if part of that is that is, like, if we were to look at, like, you know, today's or yesterday's ballet competitions, right? Mm-hmm. I could see that very easily being a case of watching the master's class ballet and being, oh, I can't do that. But you could do a ballet. It's not going to be a master's class ballet.
Perhaps,
but you could do the competition, but it's really easy to look at that, you know, that top ballet and go,
mm-hmm.
oh, I can't do that, so why should I bother competing, right? So maybe there's something there about communicating that you don't have to do this. Like, just
mm-hmm.
maybe what the minimum bar is to be able to place at all, you know, or, you know, somehow encouraging.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, if it's a ballet and I'm just, you know, I haven't learned any tricks and I'm just doing this and I could maybe jerk with the music or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But if the competition involves certain tricks and I haven't learned them,
right,
I can't compete with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I would just look like a fool to go out there and try to do the, what was that one you showed me today?
Oh, the insane.
Insane.
Yeah.
I can't do the insane. I mean, it's kind of silly for me to go out there and compete.
But is that something that you could involve, like, diving does, like in gymnastics with difficulty levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that certain higher tricks.
I think
right.
that's what Tricks Party was trying to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They grouped the maneuvers into various
they are,
classes.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah, they've
if
got
you
what,
attempt the
five
higher
classes
five,
or something.
And
I think
you
they've
succeed,
got five.
You get higher points.
Correct.
But the person attempting the higher class trick performing poorly would still lose against the person attempting
correct.
The lower class trick doing,
doing
it
very
excellently.
Well. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was an interesting concept. And
yeah.
It always has been.
Because, I mean, it brings in
requires,
deductions and
requires very knowledgeable judges, though.
Correct.
Sometimes.
And that's going to be the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, all of this is the hard part.
Yeah. So there is the third aspect, right? So we talked about the second aspect being the competitor, right? And the third aspect is the organizer and the infrastructure, right? Because we know that with the current competition format, it takes, what, seven people? Appropriately, it takes seven people to run a given discipline and class.
A little bit less, but sure.
It can be less.
4 to 5 to 6. Yeah.
Yeah, so you need...
We used to pull it off with three.
Well, you can, but yes. You're
supposed to field director.
Yeah, you need a field director. You need three judges.
So one of the judges would double as field director.
Oh yeah.
That's what we would do. We would do three judges, and one of them usually.
But that judge then wouldn't be available to do the yapping after the person just flew, the previous person. That was very important.
To do what?
The yapping.
To do the after performance yapping. It's like, what did you get? Well, I saw this and I saw that.
Yeah. And then
calibrating scores.
Yeah.
I never did that.
We never did that.
I've seen it.
But here's the other side of that. That doesn't happen in other sports.
Exactly.
Judges judge independently of other judges.
This is where I was a bit sarcastic.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of time spent on the after performance review
that doesn't need
and
to be
calibrating
yeah.
and making sure that my numbers are not that much different from my colleague judge.
That's political.
Oh, yes.
And that does not need to happen.
I know. I agree.
Yeah. So that wouldn't happen
fully
in work with the group I was with.
Okay.
Yeah.
No,
and
I
then,
never did anything.
Then
it was standard. I've seen it everywhere.
It's definitely happened at indoors.
On both coasts.
Yeah.
Oh, Connor always wants to calibrate when we do
I've
it.
Oh, I've never judged with Connor.
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily wrong, right? Because especially my first time judging, I did that because I was like, I would give that person a 50, and I'm looking over at Amy and Connor, and they're giving the person like an 80, and I'm like,
ideally, you want to have shadow judges
for beginning judges.
Yeah,
the way
so,
we dealt with it is, I mean, I shadow judged for a few competitions, and I would get feedback saying, "You're way out of whack here," because, you know, eventually I understood it.
Or you've got your own opinion and views, and you can defend them.
Yeah,
that's okay too.
Yeah, and what I would do is, you know, I would make note of how I scored stuff, and then 3 weeks later, when the scores finally came out or whenever, I would go and look and see how the three of us collectively scored.
Yeah,
and I would say, okay, you know, I'm in the right ballpark. And every once in a while, I'd be totally out of whack, and I'd call up the other guys and say, can you remember what happened so I can keep myself calibrated?
Yeah.
But that's where
that's what I used to do.
Calibration is the word here.
Yeah. That's where other sports benefit. I mean, obviously the visibility and interest aspect, but quantity of judges.
Yeah.
They can drop a high and drop a low.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, ideally you want 5 judges, not
correct.
3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, for that
yeah,
reason.
Yeah, there's a reason Derby has 7 officials watching us, right?
Yeah.
the head.
Because you're all so criminal.
Yes, exactly. That's why. Right, but we have 10 people out there playing the game, 7 watching us play the game to make sure that we don't mess up.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So the other aspect of the organization side, right, is not only the judging and that infrastructure, but it's also the time infrastructure. Because if you were to run a competition event in the given format and say you're going to do both ballet and precision, and you've got dual line and quad line separated out.
Why do they have to be separate?
That's a good question. all of the standard requirements right now require a bunch of time breaks between each thing, an excessive amount of time. So a short amount of time flying in a given day will easily take 6 hours.
It's like football.
But it's worse than football.
Except you'll have some cool stuff to watch in between.
Yeah. Except they have cheerleaders, right?
Yeah.
They have
good commercials.
Yeah, they have great commercials. So that becomes cumbersome, especially for event organizers.
Absolutely.
And for generally the competitors who are staffing at the same time that they're competing.
But also the competitors that are flying multiple disciplines too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they might get, 10, 15 minutes of flight in 6 hours.
While being on duty for those 6 hours.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, so it's cumbersome and it really like it's burned a lot of people out.
I think one of the hardest parts that I don't think we've talked about at all is the geographics of it all. Especially here in the States, we are so spread out.
Yep.
So spread out.
And there is regulation field size.
Correct.
Right? Yep. And that's not always easy to obtain.
No. But to try to get that together frequently enough to make things consistent enough to be able to do it, you know, multiple times a year, year after year.
I take the example, and I have always been super impressed with Donna Hutchins. In order to attend the AKA convention and compete in the nationals, she had to have a ranking from her region.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only way you can get that is if you compete in a sport kite competition in your region or in your conference, right? She's a Midwest conference. There is no sport kite competition there, so she
not a region.
There are no competitions in 5 or 6.
Yeah. It was very, very complicated for originally. So what she would do is she would actually get a sport kite competition sanctioned. She would be the only competitor, and she would have to bring in 6 people to essentially run the event.
Yeah.
So that she could compete. And I mean, that's a very extreme case, but it's like, wow, the dedication, right?
Yeah.
That's impressive. So that she could go on to nationals and compete at nationals. Yeah. And it, like, I'm just mind blown thinking of, wow, you really love the sport if you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean.
And she does.
I mean, there's certainly that, but if you think about it, I mean, we have established flyers East Coast and West Coast that are separated by 2,500 miles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you have? You've got 5 blocks, right? You've got Upper West, you've got Lower West, you've got Midwest, you've got Upper East and Lower East.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of roughly it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So it's hard.
And you'd lump Midwest kind of just a straight column down the middle, I would assume.
Yeah.
Because you'd probably take Texas and Oklahoma in that.
No, because it doesn't really seem that very many people came from there.
But they could.
I'm surprised there was
they could, but they don't have to travel far because the events aren't there for
yeah.
them.
Yeah, when you look at where the
events... There's some stuff, there are actually events in the Midwest. There were actually events in the Upper West,
correct.
Lower West, Upper East,
well, and
Lower
I understand
East,
why there aren't events
but not so
in
much.
Texas and Oklahoma.
Exactly. You know,
but even in the areas where there are events, the event is attempting to cover an area that's 200-400 miles across.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, just the group that I fly with, from the furthest north person to the furthest south person is about a 2-hour drive.
Yep.
That's nice. Not that bad.
And we do events
that's
across
close.
That whole
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. We're all so, like, oh, that sounds really great.
Yeah.
that sounds like my old days in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. But, you know, so you that's end up having, you know, you usually end up driving a couple of hours to the event and, you know.
Which is fine, right?
Yeah.
It's or if I know, you know, even if I know there's not a lot of competition events around, but I want to compete, and I know, okay, I've got to fly to the East Coast from here on the West Coast, so I'm taking a weekend to do this. I want to get in as much competition and flying as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the balance has to be heavy on that side, not
yeah.
on the infrastructure side.
Yeah, well.
And I, yes,
forget
I think,
about it.
I know, I think
yeah.
it is useful to be part of the infrastructure, but it feels very unbalanced. It feels...
I mean, that's...
Well, it's also no longer a real topic, right? Because, let's be honest...
It doesn't exist anymore.
Competitions
yeah.
don't really exist anymore at this point.
I mean, this is all... this whole thing right now is a hypothetical.
Right.
Right? So...
It's just laying the groundwork for
correct.
This potential new...
Correct. Like what you're talking about, it would have to be set in a way... That wouldn't be practical, so never mind.
cool.
Stop your thought mid-train
yeah,
and jump
I mean,
off.
Mid-train.
I mean, it could
yeah,
work like you would do...
Stop your train mid-thought.
There you go. Okay, I
got it.
I'm smart.
John got me.
I mean, it would be a lot from the organization side, but it could potentially work where you're mapping out weekends and doing one day here, one day there.
Yeah.
It'd be an absolute pain in the ass, but it could work.
Yeah.
It'd be an awful weekend for people flying in, but...
Or even if you do weekends with a lot of flying for 2 days, so that you could plan to get in early one day, stay overnight, leave late afternoon the next day.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, I mean, it's make it kind of come in a Friday night and leave a Sunday night.
Yeah, yeah, kind of make it worth your while to.
So the idea we kind of came up with, right, is in the simplest sense, it is an obstacle course, or it's a series of obstacles within the kite window.
Parkour.
It is parkour for kites. Okay. Now, these can be actual physical obstacles, and
balloons.
That's
dangerous.
Balloons.
We're not allowed to land on balloons, Paul.
Yeah, but the way that you're scored is time.
It's time trials.
It's time trials. Now there are ways that you can get through the obstacle if you are a beginner flyer, right? And there are ways that if you are a master flyer that can do tricks, you may be able to complete the obstacle quicker.
So in a way, it's almost like drone racing.
Yeah, for kites.
Yeah.
Right? So you would be able to put novice with masters, right?
Yeah.
And they can compete against each other, and they do have the ability to all equally win. You don't have to be a heavy trick flyer.
But if you are, you can take more risk
for
more reward. Or you can just go down in flames.
And
correct. Would there be any compensation for different kites for equipment?
So I would say no. But there, we keep kind of falling back on whether or not even dual line and quad line should be combined. But
in that sense,
quad lines will have the advantage
yeah.
if you combine
yeah.
them.
Yeah,
something like
but doesn't matter what dual line you pick and you take out there to fly. That you're a competitor. That is completely on you. You do
true.
You do what you do.
The interesting bit is with current competition format, precision or ballet, you're not going to win. Or even score if you fly, say, a quantum.
Correct.
Being honest.
Yeah.
But you could use that quantum to run through an obstacle
absolutely.
Course and not make any mistakes.
Correct.
You could do well.
But you could also find something else that's going to be a lot faster to get through it faster. You may make those mistakes.
Yeah.
But you're
going to
gain it on the time.
But it's not penalizing.
Mic on for the win.
Yeah, it's
that's
not,
what, exactly what I was thinking.
It's not going to penalize
fuck up
the
a lot
people
the mic
who
on.
Haven't spent, you know, $600 on a custom set.
Correct.
And it's also not penalizing
yeah,
the new people.
It would aim to equalize the unbalance between masters and novice flyers, the unbalance between $600 and $100.
Yeah, and honestly, from my personal perspective, it'd be a hell of a lot more fun.
Yeah. Everybody gets essentially two shots. We
and
take your
visually
best
from
whatever,
visually from a spectator, like if there's physical things that
it's
are being
yeah.
gates that are being flown through or
yeah.
something like that, it's
they understand obstacles. They understand time, right?
Correct.
You do not have to understand
they're,
flying.
It's measurable.
So I'm trying to visualize what this obstacle course would look like.
Well,
is it something you would have to walk through with your kite, or you stay in one position, or
so?
But mostly your kite will have to do the talking.
Yeah, your kite has to go through the obstacle course.
But I mean, are the obstacles going to be all in one place where you would stand in one place and work your kite through it? Or is this something
yeah.
that's going to be like strung out and you're physically going to have to?
Oh, so it's more like there may be three obstacles and you have to do You have to do a circle around, you have to then do a straight line through, and then you have to do this, right? I've got little drawings of random ones.
It's always going to be about getting from A to B.
But you wouldn't have to move significantly.
Yeah.
You physically, yeah, mm-hmm. you're going to have to do some forward-backward movement,
yeah.
but you're not having to walk down a line
okay.
and like...
Yeah.
Like
you
the
yourself
Mario,
are going through a maze.
Yeah, the
yeah.
Mario...
So there's just a
jumping.
Few obstacles. I'm thinking,
unless
you, know,
unless you decide you wanted to use... short lines to do this for whatever reason.
Yeah,
and
then you're running
then,
side to side.
And then you run side to side with your short lines.
Yeah, so that's the
or
other thing
you,
is there's
you
no
know,
competition
or do you,
line.
Or do you standardize line
yeah,
lines?
I just didn't know if there was like 20 obstacles in your...
yeah.
Did we?
Yes.
Okay.
I think there would have to be some sort of standardization.
You'd fly off the bridles and you just race
you'd be
through
slow.
It.
Yeah.
Have
you
guys tested...
You cannot run faster than a kite.
But you might be more precise... when you're flying off the bridles. But these are details.
Yeah.
So
have you guys tried
I didn't hear what you said about line
to,
lengths.
Yeah.
Hmm? I didn't hear what you said about line lengths.
Oh, I think that shorter lines might be easier.
Okay.
Yeah, he was suggesting maybe a minimum line length.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So instead of saying everybody's on 70s, just
being lines, right?
Nobody under 50.
Catch them to my
yeah.
wrist.
Yeah, I think that
yeah.
makes more sense.
And no field dimensions or anything like that. So if you want to come at it and only be doing it through the edge of the wind window, fine. There's no field management. There's no field penalties for crossing over the lines or stuff like that because it's just... It's a time.
There are no lines.
There are no lines, right? It's just getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be time penalties assessed for.
No, you still have
missing
to
gates
it.
Or.
The time doesn't
like
stop until you finish the obstacle.
Dead lunge. Back to the gate.
Might be there for a while for some people.
Yeah.
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 And then realistically, just to be on.
Does
the safe,
this involve like a giant scoreboard?
It should. It should.
Absolutely.
Right. Scoring.
Yeah.
Right?
And the
or 100%.
A person
ideally,
with a stopwatch is screaming at least.
No, it
yeah.
needs a big
or
red clock.
So you ideally
and
need...
a thing that makes ticking sounds.
Yeah.
And an air horn.
You need the timer, right? A
no,
person who's
air
actually
going
to do the timer.
Correct.
And then maybe two people that are, you know, so you have time comparison, right? But also just having a series of obstacles, like a catalog of obstacles, say 50 of them, right?
Yeah.
And you have no, as a competitor, you don't know what the obstacle is till you arrive at the event and they say, we are doing this, this, and this. This is the course. This is run one is course.
Yeah, whatever.
This obstacle.
A, F, and G.
Yeah, A, F, and G, right? And then you find out, okay, we just ran through run one. We're going to do run two. It's B, R, and P, right? So, and
B,
being,
B,
and
B, I think.
Yeah, right? So, yeah, so you actually don't know what
been
you're
there.
Coming to.
But you'd have a catalog beforehand of what they
no,
choose from?
No, but you...
No?
You, we could have a catalog ahead
you'd,
of time.
You'd have to.
Yeah, but it's also, if you have the absolute basic skills of launch, land, turn left, turn right, you know, you should be able to do every one of the obstacles at some point. That's the base level, right?
Yeah, and you, I mean, you
I
could.
Can do that.
Yeah, and
we'll see about that.
Yeah.
Guess what we're doing tomorrow?
Yeah, and then you don't have to have people out there with their rulers making sure that you're in
yeah.
the, you know, the certain 10-foot, 20-foot, whatever.
I mean, you could to a way. If you're going to standardize minimum length, have a start point and an end point, and have
I think line length would have to be defined between say 80 and 100 foot or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Correct.
Do
yeah.
your own thing between those two line lengths.
Yeah, but have a start point and an end point, and almost create it as a gate, and you could rig a start clock and a stop clock as it passes the sensor through the gate.
Yeah.
That's how you. So you're not relying on human error starting and stopping a clock.
Part of your hardest part is dealing with depth.
Yeah.
Right. If you have an obstacle course, then
which is why minimum length.
It's really easy to pull back away from the obstacle course,
correct.
And there's nothing stopping you to fly through. Or if you're just kind of flying through and you're not necessarily meshed up with it, your perspective is going to be different than other people's perspective, and it's really easy to think, oh, you crossed where you weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
But from your perspective, maybe you didn't, and so, you know, that could be contentious. So having consistent line length could help with that, because then you could have maybe markings on the ground of like, exactly, here's some guides for you, stay in this path and you'll stay within the course. Like, you know, and then that would be
Right? They're obviously, except for a handful of them, you're never necessarily going to be completely in line.
I totally agree.
Right, but there's going to be a 10-foot.
If you're not in line, then perspective becomes an issue.
Right. Okay.
Right? Because if you're looking right at it, okay, you got your perspective, but if someone's looking at a different angle, you may be clear, but someone up over here, they see you passing over the obstacle, right, and intersecting with it. And so... Yeah. So that makes it harder to tell whether you cheated or not, right? Yeah. If you're not actually in it.
Yeah, because like I totally see it like as you're almost skiing in a way, like you're flying through gates. Mm-hmm. So I totally see a big pole with like pool noodles.
Yep.
On the end of it, and maybe like a piece of toilet paper hanging down that you can cut through the gate with your lines or the kite. So it's obvious that you've gone through the gate.
I love that.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Because there's the visual confirmation that you've made the gate.
Yes. Adding a little extra entertainment like there.
Yep.
or, you know, I mean, that doesn't have to be there, but it would be immediate confirmation.
She's plastic and modular.
And how do you keep the toilet paper or streamers in the right place with the wind blowing?
Yeah.
Tape it on both ends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Use vented toilet paper.
That's what they have at rest.
Oh, that's what those perforations between the sheets are for.
Yeah. So
very, very thin restaurant.
Very thin napkin. So the kind of in that realm, right, is that it needs to be obstacles that any event could potentially replicate.
Yeah.
Wherever they are, right? With realistically what they have, right? So,
in a way, we're making a ninja course.
Yeah,
for kites.
So we looked at, you know, like some ideas we had where, you know, you just have poles out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look beautiful. It
doesn't look dry.
No. So, like, if you had a pole that's just upright, and the obstacle, the time for you to do it, is to essentially go from your starting on the left side of the pole, near the pole, and you need to get on the right side of the pole. That is it.
Doesn't matter how?
Doesn't matter how, right? So a beginner is probably going to go for a straight big launch up into a circle and try to come down on the right-hand side. Right? This is a very basic move.
The
now,
starting position of the kite matter?
No.
Okay.
Now, if you were to do it, you got an upright pole and you got to start from the left, and now you got to end up on the right hand side.
Comet my way over.
You have to at least clear the top of
if
it.
If starting position, oh,
right,
you didn't clarify that. I was like, if starting position doesn't matter, just put it on side and do a cartwheel.
Yeah,
that's
what I was thinking.
And you
thinking.
Can't touch the object, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't
matter. We could maybe say that,
matter.
Right? But the object, or
you can't touch the object, but it's a risk if you do.
Right.
Get entangled in it.
So if the obstacle is to go from the left side of the pole, and you have to clear the top of the pole and land on the right side of the pole, right? A beginner is probably going to go for a launch in a nice big circle and come to a landing. Now, our heavy trick flyers,
you can go up half axle and come down.
Yeah. Would it be faster? Yeah. Are you risking being too close to the pole and smacking it and knocking yourself out of the sky? Yeah.
Probably more of a risk on your landing coming down if you have to land close
hitting
to the pole than you're landing. And
but you don't necessarily have to land close to the pole. You just have to land on the other side.
We could define, like...
Yeah, in a zone.
Yeah, within a zone.
Everything
right?
here is stretchable, right, rules-wise. It's just a concept.
Correct.
It's just a thought. It's just an exercise in thinking.
But even that, like... Oh, hi, sweetheart. Even that, the audience can understand that obstacle.
Yeah.
Right? They understand what happens there, and they're going to see, oh, holy crap, Wadi just did something weird, and he ended up there in, like, a half a second.
Yeah, and I'll pretend that I meant to do that.
yes, you will.
People
walk away cheering.
Some of the others were, like, you start... and you have to get at least one wingtip inside a circle, so like a hula hoop, that is out there, and
that's
it's
a small circle.
It's canted back, right? But you have to get a wingtip in there now.
Oh, like it's in the air.
No, it's,
oh, it's
on the ground.
Okay.
Right? So me, I know the way that I'm going to do that. I'm going to get that bitch on the ground, and then I'm going to hop it over there until a wingtip gets there, right?
Does it have to stay in there?
It just has to get a wingtip in the circle. It
just has to touch in there.
Yep, it just has to get in the circle.
Totally breaking my kite doing that.
Probably, right? Awesome. Now, how would you go
to nosedive
get
hard enough
into the circle?
Oh, that wingtip will come down and hit
you
the floor.
You didn't say what end of the wingtip.
Yes. There's only one end.
One
wingtip
to a kite.
The tip is
two.
The nose,
yeah,
is the
tip.
The wingtip extends to the nose.
It does.
That's the leading edge.
No, it does not.
Right? But so
fine. I can see I cannot be competing in this. I will have to be jury in this.
Yeah. But
there aren't judges.
I would hop
too
it
late
over,
yeah,
right, while it's on the ground, because I don't trust myself enough to go for something
to come do
awesome
a tip stab or
to do a half axle.
So you gotta,
yeah,
what you
gotta
do there is you gotta come down and pancake into it.
Not a wingtip.
You get that wingtip down there. You pancake deep enough. Bloop.
Yeah.
No.
The wingtip touches.
Oh, sure.
So now,
yeah, sure.
Grabs the,
right?
The,
you don't even have to do the work to turn around. You just, right?
Devil's advocate.
Yeah.
I mean, you,
right,
could even come through and do a leading edge landing and just slide through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nose dive, let go.
As long as that wingtip gets in there,
yeah,
right?
Get that wingtip in there.
So, yeah, I mean.
Right. The wingtip needs to be defined on the ground and in a stable position.
So would this just be one thing, or would it be a combination? That will be one part of a combination of moves.
So the idea would be like a given run would be probably three obstacles.
Okay.
Right? So it's realistic enough for you to try and do A. Okay, so I'm going to do the left side of the pole to come up and get on the right side of the pole, right? And then B would be, I gotta go get a wingtip in that hula hoop over there. And C is, I gotta fly one way underneath the pole over to this other pole and come back and fly back underneath it.
Really,
right?
Honestly, if you just, I'm just thinking about this, if you just have literally a vertical pole in the
mm-hmm,
and go from A to B from start to land, that can be done in like five different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is the quickest?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter how you.
I actually don't know right now.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how you do it as long as you get there.
Exactly.
That's what you're talking about. That's what levels the playing field.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are definitely some.
There will be carnage.
But there are some that will, if you are able to do some of the upper level tricks, it will be advantageous for,
correct,
you to do it. Right.
That's how it should be designed too.
Right. So like, I think there was one here.
De-emphasize the 2-point landing.
Well, there's one here where you have two.
All my
goals.
Landings are on the nose now. You gotta get from here to here? Just fucking plow.
I was thinking about it.
Don't waste time with your landings.
That's right.
Right? But there's one I kind of sketched up here.
Or
where
at least
you have,
in a recoverable position.
Yeah, two poles that are saying like.
You get
10.
There, you're done. Who needs to recover?
Yeah, you're done. If it's your last obstacle, you're done, right?
Oh, do you have to launch from the first obstacle to the
next
obstacle?
You should have to if you've got three.
The time is how you
get
through all,
yeah,
say, three. Okay.
You're going to do your three separate kites on the first one.
Yeah. Okay, per obstacle.
Yeah.
Each one is trashed each time.
That, you know what? You got through. But yeah, like the whole idea is that we could kind of play with it, right? So you do run one. It is nothing for the organizer to go out there and be like, all right, give us 5 minutes. We're going to shift stuff around. Let's do run two. Everybody gets to go through and we can do a new obstacle.
So who has a banner pole for tomorrow?
I don't have a banner pole, but I have some short poles we can try. We can try and play with.
I have anything that I'm willing to put holes in.
You can do it over my truck. Yeah. I don't care if you run into the truck.
So you can get
it's
your
always
wingtip in my window.
Oh, yes. I have video of him.
I've seen the pictures.
Playing and
I wish it was intentional.
We'll just open sunroofs.
That was a cool night.
Yeah.
It was fun.
A cool evening.
I really liked that.
But yeah, so I don't know. Is it something like, would it encourage you to compete?
That?
Yeah.
100%.
All right.
I would much rather do that than ballet and precision.
Okay.
Because that is fun.
I think one thing I like about this is the lack of necessary prep.
Correct.
You could come in zero prep at all. Where in ballet, you at least need to give music.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, you have, there's some prep.
Choreography.
Sure, but
yes. And a little bit of time.
In,
they need
in
to
all
have
honesty,
a music
I approach. Haven't seen much of that in the last couple of decades.
Yeah.
But... yeah, you could come in.
But I mean, you
can
come in
and
look
well.
At the chart and have a decent idea of what you're going to run into that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prep is low, judging requirement is low.
Yeah.
And it's, I was going to say, for our experienced and new flyers, is it something you would
do? Yeah, I would do it. Because I wouldn't do it for the competition, more just for the experience, just to see how it would do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's generally why I compete.
Yeah.
I just want to.
I mean, I would do it knowing I'm not going to win.
But you could.
But
you could.
I could.
That's,
but
yeah, that's the beauty.
Most likely I wouldn't, but I would do it for the experience.
I think you could have, recreational events would have, tennis balls covering the tips of the, the banner poles. But nationals,
no.
You're doing spikes.
Those are spikes. Those are pitchforks.
Yeah.
Poison.
Flaming blue.
Yeah, you got those bird repellents all over that.
So if your kite touches it, goes.
Replace the banner poles with flamethrowers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're upping the game.
If you don't fly high enough, you're in trouble.
Phosphorus tipped.
Yeah.
Kerflui, says the kite.
Kerflui.
Come, destroy your kite.
Yeah. That's going to be the official name of the competition format is Kerflui.
Yeah.
Kerflui. What does it mean? Just wait till nationals.
There will be phosphorus.
Yeah.
Nationals are held in Hell, Michigan. Just
Yeah. What about you?
I think
as
we
a,
have a format.
As
yeah.
A,
yeah
or
I, would, I, or, I would. I would do it. I mean, to me, the thing about competition is. As somebody who's not at the master's level, it's all about driving yourself to improve your skill set so that you can do better.
Yep.
And that's what the old format competition has done for me, although it's painful. And that's what this competition format would do. Is by forcing you to have to make sure you've got certain skills in your quiver. To be able to do well.
Yeah, the basics.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody will have to have the basics to be able to do it. And that's really ultimately what's going to determine who wins.
The basics are all about being able to control your kite.
Yep.
Or as John would say, to fly with intention.
Yep, with intention. Canvas.
But what's also nice about it is that's different from previous. You're not competing against
against yourself.
Yeah.
It's against a clock.
Yep, it's against
and
the
yourself.
Clock.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, ultimately there's a ranking, but...
Correct.
You're competing against a clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's something that you can look at from event to event to event and
correct.
See how you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And measure yourself.
And it's immediate.
Yeah.
Well,
the audience gets it right away.
And for, people like me, I'm not a super competitive person anyway. Even if I was a really good kite flyer and could do lots of trips, I don't even know that I would compete because I'm just not, I would do it more for the fun of it.
Okay.
Just to be able to participate
with
other kite flyers and not really do it so much for the competition.
If you're impaling your kite onto a
phosphorus stake.
A phosphorus stake.
Your fellow competitor. So it'll be a bit of fun of it.
But I mean, what's great about this, like we've said, is you don't have to know tricks to do this.
No,
exactly.
You know,
that's the whole point.
It can be advantageous, certainly,
it's,
but you don't need to. You just need to
be
able to take off
turn
and land.
Part of the community and participate.
Depending on the definition of landing, you can be. Not very good at all.
It can be a leading edge landing. It can be in Spence's case, it can be a nose.
Well, I think there's only a handful of them that should be very, very defined landings, right?
Correct.
So, you need to put a wing tip into the circle, right? I don't care if your leading edge is down and that's a wing tip in the circle, or if your trailing edge is down.
I think the word control needs to be part of the definition.
No, no, because it got in there.
Okay.
It's time.
All
right. Right? Now,
but that would have
remember,
to be first or second. It can't, that type of thing wouldn't, can't be the third.
Right.
That can't be your out.
Yeah.
Because you'd have to be able to recover from that.
I
mean, to
I
go
think
to
you
the
could,
next
e-
one.
I think you could easily define
even recovery,
the orientation.
Right?
Correct.
I think you can define the orientation if you really wanted to.
Yeah, for some of them.
Like, here's the, because it's, this is, if we're using, if we're limiting it down to, like, a specific category of guide, dual line or quad line or something, mm-hmm. you could go, here's the orientation, and it needs to be in this zone.
Yeah, this is where it needs to start, and roughly this is how it yeah. needs to finish.
Yeah.
Roughly. Yeah. Well, again.
On the ground, strings attached.
Again, yeah, if I say one wingtip needs to be inside the hoop and you have both.
Yeah.
That's still one.
That's still one. If you're doing a wingtip stand, that's one. If you have a two-point landing and one is in there, that's still one. So yeah. that's what I mean by relative, yeah. right?
It'd be really interesting on how this would maybe change with the wind as well, right? Like, for example, I'm thinking about that, you know, going up and over, right? And I'm thinking, oh, just go up and over and just smash it. But but because you have to move on to the next one, okay, what if you come up and over in a new pancake, and if the wind is light enough, you can sit there in the pancake on the ground, and that's your landing, mm-hmm. and then you can pick up and just go, right?
Yeah.
Then you mm-hmm. can, you know, obviously that wouldn't work if the wind is heavy, but it'd be a, you know, kind of, yeah, some of those kind of fun weather-dependent tactics.
Exactly, decision-making on the spot.
Yeah.
But also think about how somebody who's relatively new would do it.
Yeah, I would go in a big circle, land here,
yeah.
Yeah. pause there before I go to do something else. Yeah. But we're still doing the same exact... Oh, jeez.
What?
We're still doing the same exact yeah. obstacle, right? Yeah. And it's very likely we could potentially even be doing the same time.
Mm-hmm. But this would also require a field judge for confirmation of completion of task.
Yes, yeah, but, someone to manage the yeah. stopwatch.
But it's one.
But yeah. Three judges.
Yeah.
You only need one.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So one judge.
One to confirm wingtip in, or one to confirm gone through gate.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see doing maybe one per obstacle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a little annoying. Or maybe two, because then you could have one.
Yes.
And one once judging the next one, you can move over.
Correct. One but, and three. And
you're not
going
to be able to move one but, person as you go.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
those, one for two and one for
those
one.
Field yeah, judge, yeah. You can those field judges it. Have almost. No knowledge requirement.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
It's all...
They don't have... You know, to judge now, yeah. you have to have a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, it's right. whether or not, as a kid, you put the square peg in the square hole or not.
Yeah.
And if you did, then welcome as a judge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we could also get, potentially, audience involvement in yeah. judging and,
yeah.
and everything else, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a...
And you give them a flag.
Yeah.
We like that
green
for,
flag, red flag.
You know, we've done a lot of WISCIFs where for Mystery Ballet,
yeah,
they bring in spectators as judges, and that's always kind of fun.
Mystery Ballet, Mystery Judge.
That's yeah, interesting. It might
that's
be good
fun.
To
have two: one controlling the time and one observing. Because yeah. if you're worrying about the time, you might, you know.
I do like the idea of gates, though. You guys were saying
yeah.
a simple gate clock is really, yeah. really easy to set up.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
With essentially, the kite starts here. It has to pass through the gate, do the obstacle
yeah.
one, do obstacle two, do obstacle
it
three, and exit the gate.
The kite was
would lines
right,
trigger it?
But
huh?
Would lines trigger it?
But if you have
lines
tactile
should...
if you have tactile gates that you could, you know, like the toilet paper, right? You have to run through that, right? Then you wouldn't even actually need someone watching it necessarily. You could video it and you could do the time after
yeah.
after the fact, like shortly after the fact. And you really just need someone on there to reset the gates, right?
Yep.
And
I still think it needs to be more immediate than that, though.
Yeah, I like
I mean,
it.
I think short after, right? You like
yeah.
each competitor or something, you know, you could,
yeah.
during the competitor, you could release.
I mean, it'd be great to do it on like a football field and have it on a scoreboard running, like a running clock on the
yeah.
scoreboard.
That'd be
yeah.
cool, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, then the audience sees it and understands,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, because this aspect is every bit as much for them as it is for us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it could be really entertaining for the audience.
Oh, there's going
to
be so much crash and burn.
There
is
so much
awesome.
That'll turn out to be the favorite event.
Yeah.
There's got to be like a glass door in there somewhere.
Yeah,
that
the floor
break,
is
break
lava.
Through or...
yeah.
The floor is lava.
Yeah. All right. Well.
So I'm hearing so far a rather optimistic response to possible format.
Yeah, we would just have to run a few test runs and see if it's usable.
I mean, not having competed in prior formats, that's the most interesting to me.
Yeah, cool.
You guys have, Wadi and Paul, you guys have competed extensively in the format.
Yep.
And dual line, quad line,
ballet,
precision.
It's hands down my favorite.
You've done hot tricks, tricks party.
I'm even thinking about downhill skiing.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be ski ballet.
Yeah.
There did.
Which is amazing.
That was intense.
I did some of that. It is so much fun.
So cool to watch.
So
but it's not a thing anymore, right?
So skis.
And it's like really cool artistically, but you know, obviously the races seems like that's a much more accessible and easy
thing to
manage and participate in from a spectator standpoint. So that could very well explain why ski ballet isn't in the Olympics anymore. It's really cool.
But that doesn't explain why rhythmic dancing is.
Because it's hard to dance against a clock. I don't know. You dance these moves.
You have a rhythm.
Yes, but rhythmic dancing is incredibly...
Correct.
Yeah, it's...
It's an undertaking.
Yeah. And it's also one of the legacy gymnastic sports.
Hmm.
But...
Yeah, but then again, you still have, you know... ice skating, where you have both, you know, speed skating for races, and you have, you know, figure skating for your ballet. So it's not that they don't have to necessarily be
able to. You wouldn't remember this, and I don't know if you do, but figure skating used to have school figures. Do you go back far enough to remember that?
Sandbags.
Teresa,
used to have what?
They used to do what they called school figures.
They moved too much.
And they'd go out on the ice, and the judges would stand there next to them, and they'd have to do something like a figure eight with on one kick and go.
So essentially, what we do for precision.
Yeah, and they got rid of it at some point.
Yeah.
So and obviously it's more years ago than I recall. Cause
I have no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Essentially,
I know
precision, right?
Now they have the short program and the long program.
Yeah.
And when they changed the whole scoring system, I lost track of everything. But what they used to do was what they called school figures and then the ballet program. And the school figures, they would go out there and do the equivalent of what we call precision.
Mm-hmm.
And the judges would all stand on the ice around them, and it was a very small area, and you'd watch it on TV, and it, you know. It was
miserable.
It was like watching grass grow.
Yeah.
Sounds like precision.
Yeah.
It's like watching rainfall.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now
that's actually
now
what they
for
need to
for
be.
Them
at times.
For them, those school figures were probably the equivalent of precision for us. If you learn how to do it, it makes you a better performer.
Right.
And
but
you kind of got to learn how to do it. But do you need to do a competition to force you to go learn how to do it?
Yeah, or do you need to, let alone take up
an entire ring?
Yeah, a personal huge like lynch point for me or pinch point is that do you need to take up potential festival goers' eyes and
no.
prime time on the field to do
no.
something like that?
We think we did.
Yeah, no. They did it here too, right?
Yeah, but here at least you have the choice to do precision or ballet. And
yeah.
If you want to just do ballet, you don't have to do precision. In
yeah,
Europe,
I mean, if
they have an overall score, and if you want to do decent in a competition, you have to do both.
Hmm.
Well, and if the precision
Silly
is
Europeans.
To learn how to control your kite, why have that? It's like learning music. You don't want to go and watch someone play scales.
Yeah.
You need to learn how to play scales.
That's what got us into
music,
mix format was a thing that was being pushed for quite a while, where it went a little bit more towards, like figure skating is now, where you have some pre-planned maneuvers that you're going to do within your routine.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing with mixed forms,
like
right? Where
one competition of that in the States ever.
Yeah.
And
there was not that much.
No.
It was pretty late
for that to start.
Yeah.
But most of the ones around here started doing it. I think for the last several years that I competed, it was not standalone precision.
Oh, really?
It was often combined.
When was this?
Even at WISCA for, you know, things for at least a couple years.
What year?
2019, 2018.
Okay, never mind then, yes. I pretty much
like recently,
competing
quite recently.
In 2013.
Yeah. Yeah, quite recently.
With a couple of exceptions, but
yeah.
Okay.
And that was not, you know, that was a step in the right direction, but it was too little too late.
Exactly that. Too little too late.
So I'm definitely not looking at, like, completely replacing all potential of the competition that's out there, right? Because I think Tricks Party is awesome, and what they do is great.
You want a new grassroots competition that we can do.
Yeah, like, let's just put something else out there and see if we can...
It's quite different. Even Tricks Party is somewhat based on what already was happening, but with it.
Yeah.
An emphasis on
they just emphasized a different part of it.
Exactly, but this is completely different.
I think it would be fun. I think it'd actually be really popular.
You're like,
because it's kind of like watching going to a picnic and watching kids do all these different things, you know.
You see a picnic, I totally
little sack races and different things like that, and anybody can do it. Parents, you know, everybody jumps in and does it, and it's just fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I can see it being really fun, and the audience will probably love it.
That's pretty understandable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean that's the biggest part. It's you can tell what's going on.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be entertaining.
Oh, people, you that know. Guy just
it's
hit the phosphorus spike.
It's not
Kirby. He's not going to score well.
Yeah. Well,
it's totally
mostly
subjective.
Because he did not bring a kite to the finish.
Yep.
It was ashes. It's pretty understandable.
The only part that wouldn't be fun is when the novice wins. An experience one does it.
Oh yeah, it's gonna happen.
It absolutely will.
I'm already mentally preparing for that.
Yeah.
Because I am going to try all kinds of sneaky shit to get my way faster to the finish, and I'm gonna fail at some point.
I'll video, so it means he'll crash when it happens, right?
It's Wadi.
Oh, Wadi goes out there, I'll turn on the camera, and the only time he'll crash is when
the person that's like, oh, this fly, my little circle, and bloop, bloop, land.
Yay, I win!
That's Wadi's kite is being incinerated on a pole somewhere.
Ends up in a wood chipper.
Yeah. Why'd I try to lob you up?
K-2000.
Yeah.
Just went for it.
I'm not seeing any scenario where a Womp the Womp would be advantageous.
You gotta get the wingtip in the circle, Paul.
Womp the Womp is clearly the best way to do that.
I think Womp the Womp is the way to go here. Well, Wadi, if you think that, you just go for it. Watch Dave over there take your win.
It's like just such a complex trick that ultimately ends you in exactly the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Jacob's Ladder, but more complicated.
Oh, it is. Yes. Jacob's Ladder.
But it's not. When you actually think about it, it's not complicated.
It's harder.
You just have to move a lot.
Yeah, we've got that whole, like, getting around when it's already wrapped and then getting the spin in there and having the depth be
so
right.
So what you're doing is you're doing that over-rotation and you're running forward to get that.
Yeah.
And you have to stop
in
order to get the sideways rotation.
Yeah.
Because if you're still running forward and doing that, there's no sideways.
Yeah. Yep.
There's no pull.
And you have
there's
to have that pitch, right? Because if it's too low, then your lines won't, it won't come around right
bounces.
And be,
it
just, there's
it
so
it
much
control,
more to
it
than
it is
Jacob.
Stopping your forward running. That's
more
awesome
of a
breaks that
it's
trick.
A timing trick.
Yes.
Yeah. Timing and slack management.
Well, everything's slack management.
You can do a half axle and not really give a shit.
Total slack management.
Sure.
Total.
Sure. All right. I guess the last question on there is, would it make sense then that everybody gets either two runs or three runs and you take the best time?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Always.
Yeah.
And do what?
Yeah.
So you do, everybody gets to go through like two or three times and you take your best time.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's your best time.
Maybe not back to back. Right?
Okay.
Like even like the snowboarding stuff, right?
Yeah.
When I was watching the snowboarding in the Olympics, everyone went through once and then like they did three runs through everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of, I think it added a bit of suspense, right? Because then it was like, oh, Sean White fucked up on this one. Is he going to make it the next time?
What would actually
I got
to
wait for it.
You can also see what weird things people do and say,
yeah.
I think I'm going to try that.
Oh, so you calibrate.
Yeah, true.
What would be cool is
it's like, I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah.
Like you go through and you do runs one and two, and then you reseed for run three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
According to time.
Oh, yeah. You got some tactics there, right? Because then come round three, everybody's been screwing up.
Yeah.
Play safe, you know, and it changes. changes like, the way you approach it.
You've got that novice that's in first place. They're going last, mm-hmm. you know?
Right, yeah, you can change up the ordering just based on placement
cool.
so far.
So we can play psych tricks on the novice.
Yeah, so now I...
No, but no, they would no, be no, going no, last because they have the best...
You're
because they have the best time.
You're really loosening that guy there.
Yeah, just yeah. Or yeah. essentially just random order of...
But that's how the first two would
but
be.
But if that
and
one really has the lowest time,
it
maybe...
Yeah.
I'm not even going to do my third. I'm still the lowest time after
yeah,
you guys
you
came up
to.
With all the...
Yeah.
Yeah, after you guys wasted lab. All your time trying to psych me out.
Yeah.
yeah. instead of flying decently.
I mean, that's the beauty of that reseed.
But then we still yeah. take the...
You may not have to.
Yeah.
You can
well,
do a victory
I,
lap
and I
just
also
stick
enjoy,
around.
Yeah, I like the victory lap bit where...
Yeah, then you can
really
do a ballet
well.
In the middle
yeah.
of your time trial.
Yeah. Yeah, you did really well on your first one.
Yeah. You guys.
Score flat. Goes from 45 seconds
to four
minutes. And a half
minutes.
Yeah.
4 minutes flat. 4 minutes flat and out, and you still want witches. I like it. You can see somebody doing that.
That person may be in this room.
Yeah. All right, well, awesome. I know we'll probably think on it a little bit more. Maybe we'll try and test it tomorrow.
There's room for that wop-de-wop. All of a sudden, like, because this is going through pumping music, of course. Yeah. All of a sudden, seeing that wop-de-wop on round number 3 for the person who's already in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, wop-de-wop, witches, watch me.
Yeah. It's the same thing you see in the Olympic snowboarding in the
yes.
halfpipe.
Yep.
You know, a guy already had a great score,
tricks.
Comes
yep.
through, does some fun grabs, and you know, that don't really do much
if
for
it,
the main
if it works,
sports.
It works. If it doesn't, who cares?
He's having
yeah,
a great time,
even.
And it's
yeah.
fun to watch.
Yep.
You know, it's a little different than what everyone else is doing, because you didn't give a shit about the score this run, so
yep.
just enjoying it.
I like it.
All right.
Yeah. Wop them up for the win.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to run through a handful of these, and maybe I can get something ready for WISCF, and we can run.
That'd be fun.
A few test ones there, and then maybe run a few test ones at other events and kind of get those rolling and see if we can get other people wanting to play with it.
I think the hard part in this is, I think the younger crowd may very much enjoy it, and the newer crowd will enjoy it, but like the old guard will be like, nah.
Dude, that's okay.
You mean, the
traditionalists?
That's okay.
Not old cards, though.
They might jump
They're still around.
He's talking about all the guys I fly against.
Mm. I don't know.
Are you
going to
do any
against,
promotion?
Like,
oh, yeah.
Examples of...
Yeah.
I don't think you really have to care about them anymore.
No.
I'm old guard.
So,
I mean, you are
but,
old.
Guard. Please, finish that sentence.
It's like, hold on, I only just had my birthday.
But a lot of the old guard isn't going to be flying that much longer.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, it's people who are like my vintage, who have been doing
I
it,
like that.
Who have been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't that many years left, and we got to get some more people in who instead of being in their 60s, are in their 40s and 30s.
Yeah.
Well, and if you make it fun, sometimes, you know, there's so many different things you can get involved in, and everybody gets so blasted serious.
Yeah.
To me, it's no fun. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, this certainly would have a seriousness in it.
It could.
But it would be a personal seriousness, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be you being seriousness? Jesus. Serious with other people because
I mean, come
it's
on.
It's
I'm gonna
yourself.
Go put a unicorn head on the top of one of these poles. And
right?
Tell me
can we put a road flare on the top of it?
No.
And the unicorn horn.
We have flares. We have so many.
There's
flares.
A unicorn right there.
This is true.
We have so many flares.
We do. We have fire
department
we have to use.
I think it's something that I would personally watch more too. You know, a lot of ballets.
Absolutely.
4 minutes per person. I will admit I don't watch all the ballets.
The quality
of
hasn't been
there. Yeah, it's a lot of time to watch. And
you're watching
it's hard for that to be. It's hard to be entertaining that whole time. But these, you know, little obstacle courses should be relatively quick and easy
at least
to keep
entertaining.
Mind.
Yeah, you're
so
watching it for the carnage.
You
yeah.
as an audience
yeah.
are going to have a good
yeah.
time.
Easy to keep my attention on that. So
either somebody's going to wrap their kite around an obstacle or
yeah.
they're going to succeed. And
yeah, or maybe they have some really creative way of getting through a thing. And
I mean, you could also learn a lot in it, too.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that roundtable discussion with everybody. That was so much fun to actually be there and be present during it. And then to even go back and kind of listen through it a handful of times and glean out, you know, some tidbits here and there. Yeah, there's some stuff that's a little bit kind of out there, you know, I doubt we're going to have pitchforks and flares and all that, but you know, the main concept is there. And I just personally, I feel pretty strong about this. I think there's a lot of potential, but I really, really would love to hear from other folks out there, other sport kite flyers, what you think, your suggestions, your feedback. So if you can reach out to me either on the Facebook page, just look for sportkite.org, or you could always send me an email at info@sportkite.org. I'm going to be posting some prompts on the Facebook page and also into various Facebook groups like the Sport Kite Pilots Lounge and the Kite Hanger, and seeing if we can get some discussions going there. I'll also put a post up on Reddit in the Kites subreddit and see what folks think there. Yeah, so really kind of want to open up the discussion floor, get your feedback, let me know, and yeah, I will talk with all of you hopefully soon, and otherwise I will see you out on the field, and yeah, let's go out and fly. All right, bye.